This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Big 12 baseball has arrived, and Major League Baseball is going to implement some new rules. Welcome back. It's another edition of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Destin McComas of orangebloods.com. We are up to episode 31 of the Extra Bases Podcast, and the Longhorns are heading into Big 12 play this weekend. They host Texas Tech, which basically another top 10 team on the Texas schedule. They open up Big 12 play at home against the Red Raiders, one of the better teams in the Big 12 this year and for the last few years, a team that's broken through, made it to Omaha under Tim Tadlock. I'm expecting a really good atmosphere at Dishwalk Field. Hopefully the weather will be better than it was against LSU, where it's pretty frigid. I can tell you right now, after walking my dog, it's really, really nice out right now. So hopefully we get some good weather at Dishwalk Field this weekend. But Big 12 baseball is here. It seems like I feel like the last podcast I did was like, finally college baseball is here. Well, Texas has already played 19 games. It goes quick, especially when sometimes teams are playing five games a week, double midweek or a four-game weekend series like Texas just played at Stanford. But I won't spend too much time on the Stanford series. We'll get into some general big picture thoughts about that. As for Texas Tech, a brief scouting report on them. I think that they are similar to LSU. That's actually the comparison David Pierce used today when he met with the media ahead of the weekend series. You're going to see some power arms. You're going to see some guys come out of the bullpen, you know, really, really bringing it. You're going to see some guys on the mound that can miss bats. But I don't think there's as much pitchability as there was with the Stanford rotation, which was filled with some guys that had power stuff, but also a lot of guys that could really command the baseball, change speeds, keep guys off balance, and most importantly, throw strikes and execute pitches. So I think that Texas Tech staff, not as talented as the LSU staff, but it's going to look similar. And they're another team like LSU that's led by their offense. Ever since Tim Tadlock's been there, that's kind of his thing. He's a hitting guy. He's a hitting coach. Knows how to recruit it, knows how to develop it. They're going to be one of the better offenses in the Big 12 and one of the better offenses in the country. We'll see if Josh Young plays. He is a college superstar. And last I looked earlier this week, and I just searched again. I didn't find any updates when I last searched. He was day-to-day with a quadriceps issue, so nothing serious, obviously. But sometimes with those muscle issues, they can linger a little bit. But if he's in the lineup, That's a big boost for Texas Tech, because I think outside of Oregon State's catcher, who's probably a lock to go number one overall in the Major League Draft, outside of him, I think you can make a case that Young is the best college hitter in the country, best college hitting prospect. I know Andrew Vaughn at Cal is really, really good, and there's some other guys like Logan Scott at UNLV and some other players that could really swing the bat, but Young is really good. I remember talking to a scout last year that went and saw him, scouted the series when Texas Tech played Oklahoma. And he gave me some funny player comparisons that are kind of out there. And his one for Josh Young was Superman. Like, just he was driving the ball all over the yard and over the fence in that Lubbock win, heading straight in towards home plate. I mean, the guy can really, really swing the bat. So it'll be a big test for Texas this weekend. It'll be another test for that young pitching staff, which has done a pretty good job so far. Definitely has had some really, really bright and dominant moments. I think that outside of that last game at Stanford, really handled itself well. For the most part, it's a pretty talented Stanford lineup. So another big test for the Texas pitching staff, a test for the offense. Can he get back to doing what it did so well against LSU, which is really staying committed with that approach? I feel like they kind of got away with that, got away from that summit Stanford, which is understandable when you're Brendan Beck was really, really good, pitched a shutout until the ninth inning. Eric Miller is probably going to be the best left-handed pitcher they see all season. He was as good as I've seen him. I mean, throwing the changeup for the strike, the slider was a weapon. He can run the fastball up there into the mid-90s as well. So it's not always easy to stay committed to your approach when you've got guys like that throwing strikes and commanding and changing speeds and things like that. But Texas does need to get back to living with that approach, which they've generally done a really good job of this year in the batter's box. So That's a brief scouting report on Texas Tech. As for Texas heading into the series, some big news for them injury-wise. Michael McCann will be good to go this weekend. David Pierce said on Thursday that he's ready to go. He practiced on Wednesday, and that's an enormous lift for Texas because, as we know, DJ Petrinsky is been ruled out for the year. Well, I say ruled out. I think Texas wants to medical redshirt him, which they want. That's what they said. They plan to apply for a medical redshirt for him, even though he is a senior. So he still could technically play in more games. I think that the limit beyond here is like 6 or 7 games. It's like a certain percentage of your regular season games. So, but he can't catch, he can't catch. He can't throw, really. I mean, that's a problem. It's a labrum issue he needed to have surgery on. So when McCann went down at Stanford, and I will spare you the details, I'll just use a quote from Mason Hibler to describe. I mean, they said Texas basically described it as a severe groin contusion. And Mason Hibler said, like, we told him we don't want to ever hear a man make the noise that he made in California again. He was in so much pain when that happened. And I think that at the time it happened, I think there was some real worry that he was going to be out a long time. Being a catcher, you're in the line of fire every single pitch that you're back there. And, you know, there's definitely an opportunity where, you know, a ball bounces in the dirt, doesn't block it. I mean, that could hit that area again. So it's huge that Texas gets back McCann. Kasten Peter, I think, besides all the wild pitches Sunday at Stanford, and part of that was because the weather, it was kind of bush league of Stanford and the umpires to play through what they played on Sunday. It was literally at one point during that marathon inning that Stanford had like 15 guys coming to the plate, and I think that they scored 8 runs that inning, I think. It was literally a monsoon for part of that inning. And like I saw, Orangewood subscriber Joey Waugh had a before and after photo, like when Cam Fields was coming in the mound. It was like before and then after the monsoon, and there's standing water everywhere. It just wasn't safe. And, you know, David Pierce brought that up again today, and he basically voiced his frustration as much as he could without calling out specific people. But he said the conditions were, you know, he hardly ever uses that as any sort of excuse, but he said it was unfair to the players playing those conditions. And, like, Cameron Fields legitimately could not grip the baseball. He could not grip it at all. It was unsafe. I mean, if you're a hitter in there, you don't know where the ball's going. So Texas proceeded to throw the ball to the backstop all inning and couldn't throw strikes and all those things. But besides that inning, I thought Peter held his own behind the batter's box. He had some issues defensively at times. The bat was pretty quiet until it started to come alive that last game against Stanford. And then on Tuesday, he has 5 RBI and hits a 2-run homer. So he quietly made a lot of progress over that time that he had to fill in for McCann. But really, this team needed McCann. It needed that senior voice out there. It needed that sort of presence in the batter's box, that hyper-competitive veteran presence in the batter's box and around the pitchers and things like that. So really good news for Texas as it heads into the Texas Tech series that Michael McCann, the senior catcher, will be back. As for the rotation, it's Bryce Elder, Blair Henley, and then TBA on Sunday. I think that Pierce wants to see who he has to use in those first two games and maybe get another look at the Texas Tech lineup to see what it handles, what it's susceptible to, kind of get some eyeballs on them. But I don't think Coy Cobb has pitched poorly. I don't, you know, he could be better, absolutely, especially with the breaking ball. But it'll be interesting to see if Ty Madden has kind of pushed himself into the rotation after just a terrific outing Thursday out of Stanford. 7 shutout innings, 7 strikeouts, no runs. I believe only gave up 5 hits and 3 walks. I mean, he was really, really good, and he's just scratching the surface. As we talked about in the last podcast, I think he's going to be a special player. So, Texas didn't recover after winning that first game. It was a competitive – the first 3 games were competitive, and then the Sunday game was just off the rails because of the weather. So if you're a Texas fan, I wouldn't put a ton of stock into that series. Stanford's really, really good. It might be the best pitching staff that Texas sees this season. We know that the defense is still the issue. And that's my big point, really, about this podcast as related to the Longhorns. It's going to come down to their defense. If they can become an above-average defense, not even a good defense, just above-average defense that makes a routine play at a high rate, they're capable of winning the Big 12, and they're capable of reaching Omaha. They really are. I mean, based on what we've seen through 19 games and how they played against LSU and, you know, going on the road to open the year against Louisiana and all those things, you know, pounding Texas Southern 17-3, which is a, you know, if you're a good team, you hammer those types of teams, and that's exactly what Texas did. So they're capable of reaching the same heights they did last season. It's going to come down to that defense. They still don't really have the middle infield figured out. David Pierce basically described second base and shortstop today as he's got three guys there. Bryce Regan is going to, if he's in the game, he's playing shortstop. If Lance Ford is in the game, he's playing second base. Mason Hibler could play one or the other. We'll see how they handle shortstop. I mean, Regan had a really, really rough weekend out at Stanford. I mean, Blair Henley pitched an awesome game. By the way, I know I've been hard on him, you know, entering this season because I saw some red flags and things like that. Besides that one big inning at LSU, he's been really, really good the last couple of starts. I don't know if it's a confidence thing or what's going on, but I think something's clicked for him, which is a big, big positive sign for the Longhorns. But Regan just had a really rough time out in Stanford. He had that error in Henley's start. Routine ball just completely whiffed on that would have got out of the inning, and instead Stanford was able to score two runs and eventually go on to win the game. So middle infield is definitely still a work in progress. First base is still a work in progress as well. Reynolds needs to be a little bit better at third in terms of throwing. McCann getting back behind the plate will help there. I like the outfield defense. Kennedy's going to be an adventure at times, but I think with reps he's going to improve. Duke Ellis is really improved his defense from last season. He's kind of he's got plus range out there, gets good breaks on the baseball right now. And Austin Todd's a solid right fielder. But really, it just comes down to that infield, especially that middle infield. Can they make the routine plays up the middle enough? If they can, it's going to elevate the rest of the roster. If they can't, it could be the one thing that prevents them from competing for a Big 12 championship. Then maybe even hosting a regional, super regional on down the road. So it really all gets back to that defense. You're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Destin McComas of orangebloods.com, episode 31, talking a lot about the Longhorns as they head into Big 12 play. And I think the Big 12 is wide open. I think it's a really, really good league. I think it's as strong as it's been in a few years, although Baylor not quite as strong as it could be. They had some tough news losing Bradford, their Friday night ace, who was the Big 12 pitcher of the year last year, to thoracic outlet syndrome, which is it's a tough injury. It's I think it's worse than Tommy John in terms of the, you know, the rehab and coming back and things like that. So that's a big blow to Baylor, although they are getting Shea Langlier back, their catcher who's projected to be a first round pick, coming back pretty quick for a hammock injury. I wonder how much juice he's got in the bat. I think he can catch, but I wonder how much or how able he is to swing the bat and make an impact that way. So Baylor not quite the contender I thought it would be because they've had some really bad injury luck, but Tech looks as advertised. I know TCU's overall record isn't that good, but they've got two guys in the rotation that are capable of shutting you down anytime they're on the mound, so they're going to be in the mix. I think Skip Johnson's going to do a good job at that Oklahoma club, Oklahoma State. I feel like I'm leaving somebody out. You know, West Virginia, not much of a Big 12 contender, I think, but they've got a guy that's going to go out there on Friday night that might be the best Friday night guy in the league. Could pitch his way into be a first-round pick. So that's going to keep them in the mix with the league. So I think the league is as strong as it's been in a while. I think there are going to be a lot of NCAA postseason teams that come out of the league. But there's not that one team that's head and shoulders above the pack right now. I think that you've got a group of teams that are in that good range. It could potentially develop into a very good team. I don't see many any teams that really have an elite potential in the league. You can kind of find a hole with everybody, but there are a few teams that could potentially become very, very good. And I just think the league is wide open, which if you're a Texas fan, that's what you want to hear because it allows this group to have an opportunity to improve its defense and play its way into possibly winning the Big 12 championship again. So the Big 12, as Texas heads into it, I think is wide open. And going back to the defense thing, here's why it matters so much for Texas, because If you look at their statistics through the first 19 games of the year, I think it tells us some important things about both the pitching and the defense. And we'll start with the pitching. Texas has pitched 164 innings as a staff this year. They have 164 strikeouts. So they're averaging one strikeout per inning. What does that mean? We all talked about the stuff of this pitching staff. Can they get the stuff to show, the talent, the bat missing stuff? So far, it's showing. Averaging a strikeout per inning is really, really good, especially for a lot of young arms. Opposing teams are only hitting 204 against Texas. Another sign of the stuff that's showing. They're missing bats. Guys aren't really barreling them on a consistent basis. And the staff has an ERA of 2.96. The walks per nine inning are at 4.23, which, again, not a surprise. While there is a bunch of stuff at this staff, there's also a lot of young guys that are learning how to execute at this level, how to command, how to throw strikes. And we know that the strike throwing has been an issue at times. It seems it kind of happened all in like certain games. Like when the train falls off the tracks, I mean, it falls all the way off the tracks. I mean, they say baseball is contagious. And that's what we've seen for Texas. I feel like you can go look at like four of their games this year. And then like that, those amount of walks account for like probably like 40% of their season walks. So we know that the strike throwing is going to be an issue at times, but the stuff is showing in the batting average against, and also the strikeouts, and also the ERA. As for offensively, this is a group that has done a pretty good job of staying committed to their approach. They have five regulars, like everyday guys in a lineup, that combine for a walk to strikeout ratio of 61 to 48. So that's 13 more walks than strikeouts for five of those guys combined. That's really, really good. There's a lot of guys, you know, Ryan Reynolds, Austin Todd. There's a lot of guys in the lineup that have cut down on their strikeouts, and you throw in a guy like Eric Kennedy, who's swinging the bat as well as anybody on the team, and he's not much of a strikeout guy. They've done a good job of staying committed to that approach, which is a very competitive approach and really depends a lot on pitch selection. Getting there, aggressive, look for certain things, but if it's not there, control the strike zone. Don't be afraid to take your walks. And I think like Texas, you know, besides sometimes against Stanford, has done a good job of really staying committed to that approach. And I think it shows in the walk amount. I think it shows in the walk to strikeout ratio for a lot of those regular guys. Basically over half of the lineup is doing a really good job of remaining patient, but also aggressive in terms of putting the ball in play. And Texas is scoring runs in multiple ways. They're stealing bases. They're not a good bunting team yet. I think they could be eventually. They're stealing bases. They are incorporating the bunt at times. They've hit and run successfully at times. They've got some guys that have hit the ball out of the yard. They got some guys that have, you know, hit some doubles. They're finding some ways to score runs. And I think that as they get into Big 12 play, they're not always going to see great pitching staffs. I like that they saw at Stanford. So I think that they've got enough offensively 1 through 9 to score enough runs to really elevate that pitching. But again, it just gets all back to that defense. They have to play defense at least, you know, an above average level if they want to achieve what they're capable of achieving, which is winning the Big 12 and then potentially hosting a regional, maybe even going back to the College World Series. But it won't be easy this weekend with Texas Tech coming to town. That's a good Texas Tech team. You know, Texas, it's getting out of the way a lot of these tough Big 12 teams early on, which is, I've said it before, the schedule actually sets up nicely for the way Texas could finish the season if it could just, you know, navigate these tough parts. And so far, it's done a pretty good job. If I would have told you, hey, Texas is going to finish the non-conference schedule 13-6, you would have taken that. You would have taken that because it means there's some series wins in there. It means that they had some success against either Stanford or LSU, and that they kind of handled their business in some of those other games they should have won. And 13-6 is a good place for Texas to be. I think that the most encouraging thing for Texas and its fans is this team's capable of playing better baseball. It's capable of being better in the batter's box. It's capable of being better on the pitching mound. And it's absolutely capable of being better defensively. I think that the Stanford series was kind of the rock bottom for defense. It can only go up from here. So that kind of summarizes where the Longhorns are right now heading into Big 12 play. Getting Michael McCann back is a big deal. The middle infield is still a work in progress. Texas Tech coming to town probably remind a lot of people of LSU in terms of being a more offensive-oriented team with some power arms in that lineup. So we're going to switch some gears here. Again, I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com, Extra Bases, episode 31 of the Yak.com/Austin. And I wanted to get into some of the Major League Baseball stuff that's come out recently with some of the rules changes that they're going to put in place this season and put in place in the future as well. And I don't think the most noteworthy item from the news that's come out about the rules changes for both 2019 and 2020, I don't think the most noteworthy piece of discussion piece from all this is the actual rules changes itself. Although the three batter minimum for pitchers, I can't come around on that yet. It kind of bothers me some. So to explain, it basically eliminates the specialist from coming in and facing a batter unless that pitcher comes in, faces a batter with two outs or one out and gets a double play ball, whatever, and the inning ends. So a manager could make a pitching change after the inning ends, even though that pitcher's only faced one batter or two batters. Otherwise, the batter's got to face three guys when he comes into the game. Of course, unless he gets injured, then he comes out of the game. I like the strategy aspect. I like that you have these guys that are specialists. I like that it kind of favors the organizations that value those things and scout for those things and understand that, you know, having a guy that's really, really good against righties and having a guy that's really, really good against lefties and how to use those guys in certain situations. So I'm not totally on board with that. I do understand why they're doing it. You know, this gets back to speeding up the pace of the game, which I saw they also adjusted the amount of time in between innings for both local broadcasts and national broadcasts as well. So the inning, the minimum batter thing for pitchers is the one that stood out to me the most. That's going to go into effect in 2021. There's also going to be a single trade deadline, which I think if it can create more, I guess, drama with one trade deadline, hey, that's pretty cool. I think the fans will like that. You kind of know, all right, you know, there's one trade deadline, that's it. The Home Run Derby is going to have a $1 million bonus now, which I think is awesome. It's going to get a lot of these guys trying to get into the Home Run Derby. Like, there might be 100 guys trying to get into the Home Run Derby now. So I think that's really cool. And there's going to be like an All-Star Game Election Day based on like the fan voting and the top three guys and things like that. They're going to have an Election Day, which I think is really cool because it's going to allow baseball players to utilize social media to interact more with fans, whether it's getting on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, say, hey, vote for me. Or maybe they're renting something to promote themselves or whatever. I'm just always in favor of anything that gives these guys more of a chance to show their personalities. Like, baseball is filled, like all sports, but baseball is filled a lot of charismatic, different guys with cool personalities and very, very unique backgrounds. I mean, you've got guys from Venezuela, the Dominican Republic, Mexico, the United States, the Far East, whether it's Korea or Japan, Curacao. Like, there are guys from all over the globe that play baseball, and they play baseball together. And you've got guys that were top picks out of high school, and you got guys that were top picks out of college, and you've got guys that defied the odds in the minor leagues and made it, and all of these things. And I'm really in favor of anything that allows these guys to better showcase who they are, the more interesting side that we don't get to see when they're standing on the field for 9 innings all the time. So I think that Major League Baseball, in a way, is not copying, but I think they're taking note of what the NBA does so well in terms of promoting their players and interacting with the fans and all of those things and all the off-the-field things that interest people. And I think this is a positive sign for that. But really, the biggest thing to me that comes out of this, and I was reading through Jeff Passan's report at ESPN.com, is it sounds like the clock has been accelerated labor relations discussion, which is, this is a good thing. This is Major League Baseball's decision makers and power brokers and owners, player representatives, players union, whatever. This is them trying to be proactive about this, which they need to do. They can't just kick this can down the road. And then just the frustration mounts because there is some frustration from players. And then you've got the owners and people like, well, the way we're evaluating now and things like that, it says we shouldn't be paying these, you know, old free agents a bunch of money when we can have these young players that are cheaper and that can produce just the same or potentially better down the road. So it sounds like the discussion out of this is that these conversations about labor relations are going to start happening now. They're not going to just delay this thing until it comes time to, you know, come to another agreement and look at the CBA. And then maybe potentially, you know, you look at like a lockout type issue for Major League Baseball. And it's not just free agency. Like it's not just, okay, what are we going to do about these guys that aren't signed in free agency? It's also about service time. Why are these top prospects that are ready to contribute to a Major League Baseball team and ready to contribute well, in some cases be the best player on that team, why are these guys not starting the season with their Major League club? Why can't fans show up and watch these guys at a Major League ballpark? Why aren't teams trying to win from the standpoint of having their best players on the roster? And I know that there's always going to be some financial aspect to young players and things like that and team control and all those things. But at some point, they've got to take a look at this. They got to give a little bit back to the players from the standpoint of, we can't keep allowing these organizations to delay free agency for these top guys until they're 26 or 27 years old by sending them in the minor leagues for months at the beginning of the season, even though they're clearly ready to sometimes be the best player. We can't keep letting that happen. So that's a very, very important discussion piece that it sounds like all the important people in Major League Baseball are going to take a look at, is the service time issue, delaying free agency for these young players, that sort of thing. Like, how can we, you know, if owners and you know, decision makers for teams are going to be like, look, everything that it's telling us now about, you know, evaluating talent and signing players and building a roster says that spending money on old free agents is not a good thing. It's just not wise. These guys are on the decline. It's better to have cheaper young players that can provide similar, better value. So if they're going to say that, okay, it has to be on the other end from the player perspective, like, okay, then we've got to come up with a way to better take care of our young stars in baseball besides pushing them down in the minor leagues for months and delaying their service time, I mean, delaying their free agency even more, and then the arbitration aspect and all of those things. They've got to come up with a way to better take care of those guys if they are looking at this free agency and saying, hey, like, you can't force us to spend money on guys we don't think are going to help us. Because that's the case. I mean, free agency this year was not filled with a bunch of big-time guys. It just wasn't. You know, the drop-off was steep. There were a lot of old guys that were in the decline that just, you know, looking for big money or long-term commitments and all those things. And you can't fault the teams for saying it's a bad value for us. So as you can tell, it's a very complex conversation. There's a lot of interest both ways. There's a lot of money involved both ways. There are, you know, how you construct your roster and all of those things. You know, luxury tax is another thing that reportedly they're going to look at as well, because some people feel like that deters spending. And I think they're absolutely right. It does. Like, these owners, as I've said before, they don't lack money. Trust me, they are rolling in the money. They're rolling in the revenue with all of these new TV deals and MLB Advanced Media and all of these things. I mean, baseball business-wise is booming. It was doing just fine. But you've got some of these teams that don't want to go to the luxury tax, and I can't blame them. You know, the Red Sox are an example. Like, the Red Sox desperately need relievers. But they won't sign Craig Kimbrel because he's old. He's starting to show signs of decline, and he wants a lot of years and a lot of money. And mainly the money part, they don't want to go to the luxury tax. So these are all very, very complex, nuanced discussions that are going to get heated, that take a lot of time to come to some sort of compromise to make some adjustments. Because it's clear that baseball, in terms of financially, as it relates to players and service time and free agency and all those things, it needs to make some adjustments. It needs to. Or we're going to be heading towards a point in time where you've got the players that are angry about what's going on. You got the players union that's just like, look, we're not going to agree to this stuff that you keep pushing out there if we're not going to get our guys the money that they deserve. And you've got the owners that are like, well, you know, this is the way we're running things now. a lot of conversation needs to take place so both sides can try to come to some sort of agreement and make some adjustments to where baseball can continue to grow and can continue to get these young stars in there, reward them, pay them, and all those things, while at the same time satisfy the owners. A Major League Baseball fan should never show up around opening day or, you know, weeks after that, should never go watch their team play at a home park when their best guys aren't there. They should never. The Toronto fans that show up to watch the Blue Jays, which are going to be a bad team this year, if they show up their opening day, they should see Vladimir Guerrero Jr., assuming he's healthy. You know, last year when the Braves fans showed up to watch their team play in, you know, in a new ballpark, they should have seen Ronald Acuna Jr. on opening day. You know, it just doesn't make sense. In what other sport is there an incentive to not play your best players? There just isn't one. You know, sure, there are rookie payment scales and all of those things, but the NFL plays its best guys, no matter how old they are. The NBA plays its best guys, no matter how old they are. But in baseball, there is actually a built-in and financial incentive for teams not to play their best guys the entire season. And they have to change that. They have to change it for, you know, the financial earnings situations for players and free agency and all those things. And they've got to change it for the fans, too. And they've got to just force organizations to put their best product on the field. Like, if you're rebuilding or tanking or whatever it is, fine. But if you've got some top prospects that are ready to play on your team now and are ready to contribute and potentially be a star, those guys need to be in the lineup. There's really no good reason why they shouldn't be out there, except if there's a financial incentive involved, which is what Major League Baseball has right now. So that, to me, is the biggest piece of news coming out of these new Major League Baseball rules changes, is that they're going to be proactive about trying to get in front of these conversation pieces and really take a long, hard look at free agency, service time, and roster management, and all of those things, so that they can get the players feeling better about the money that's being spent, because the players know there's a lot of money out there for owners to spend, and right now they're just not spending it, and they're benefiting from a situation that allows them to have a lot of cheap young players. And if Major League Baseball doesn't get proactive with that and doesn't get out in front of it, it could get really, really messy when it's time to have a new CBA and have those discussions. So, and with that, we will wrap up episode 31 of the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeWoods.com, and that was quite a rant, I think. I apologize for being a little all over the place. I'm pretty passionate about the roster management, the financials of baseball, and those things, and the fact that, like, it drives me nuts when you'll see teams on opening day out there and you've got a guy just sitting in AAA that doesn't belong there. And it's just not right. And Major League Baseball needs to get out in front of that and do something about it. So, yeah, I was definitely a little all over the place there, but hopefully you Longhorn fans got what you needed as Texas opens Big 12 play at home this weekend against Texas Tech. For you Major League Baseball fans, I hope that added some conversation piece to these new rules and the most noteworthy aspect about these rules and the things that, you know, you should really pay attention to moving forward. I do like that baseball seems committed to speeding up its game while trying to also market it and make it more visible as it relates to those individual players. They're just expressing themselves, connecting with fans, showing how interesting they are. So it's good to see that baseball is being proactive and is trying to better its product, because no change is not the answer for Major League Baseball right now. It needs to continue to grow, and it can't just grow from the financial sense. Like, the revenue can't be the only thing that grows. The game needs to grow as well, and so does the exposure and the way it connects with fans and all those sorts of things. So with that, let's wrap up this bad boy. It is Thursday afternoon, actually evening now, in Austin, Texas. I'm not used to the time change yet, which means the weekend is around the corner. I hope that all of you listeners out there have a great weekend. I hope that you baseball fans enjoy watching your team, whether it's at Dishfalk Field or on TV, Longhorn Network, or whatever your team is, spring training. Enjoy some baseball this weekend, but really have a great weekend. And thank you again for tuning in to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. Again, I'm Dustin McComas. Get to theyak.com/Austin. Check out all of the great podcast content. I mean, it's out there. There's podcasts for days. Right now. So get to theyak.com, check out those things. And shout out to our producers behind the scenes. Jeff Ketchum does a lot of our production work, but also my man Ross. He pumps these podcasts out so quick, does a great job of editing them, making that process look way easier than it should. I mean, it's something that should take a long, long time. He gets it done very well and very quickly. So shout out to Ross. Thank you for producing another edition of the Extra Bases podcast. So with that, have a great weekend. Watch some baseball and take care.